This is Kirby Shibaga.
I'm Nirav Desai.
And I'm Vinay Narayan, and welcome to XRC Pod, the XR Seattle podcast. In this episode, we're going to continue our conversation around XR collaboration software and talk about best practices that have been implemented and should be incorporated. Last time we met, we discussed XR collaboration applications, which are really the fastest growing category of VR apps. XR collaboration is software designed for groups of stakeholders to work together, to share ideas, and fill the gap of any lack of immersion that you get with video-based meeting software. And we got pretty excited and covered a lot. An area we intended to cover were more about AR applications as well. So let's round out that conversation and briefly touch on some examples of what are AR collaboration apps.
Yeah, Vinay, so AR has traditionally not been focused so much on collaboration, more with remote work and remote expertise. But I think those two areas are coming together. You see companies like Spatial, which is really targeting AR collaboration first, allowing other people to come into your office and remotely or virtually and work with you on a thought piece. And then you have other companies like Tactile, which is making remote expertise software, but also allowing collaboration over technical work instructions. These two areas, while traditionally very distinct, I think as the tools develop, we'll start to come together a little bit more.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think, you know, the excitement around collaboration, especially in XR, is really spurred by the adoption of Zoom type of platforms, right? Which are, yeah. I mean, they're really taking off because of the mass market appeal. And then as you get those stakeholders or users that are not used to using technology for collaboration, maybe for meeting, but not necessarily working together to build something together, you're seeing that need for more immersive. So with AR's install base being very small at the moment and a very particular use case, it makes sense to kind of see more of that limited opportunities at the moment for AR. But, you know, I think, you know, as we look at these great examples, one of the things that we continue to ask ourselves, what makes a good XR collaboration application? And the emphasis really is collaboration, as all XR experiences must keep the user at the center of good user interface, user design, and overall user experience. And some of the things to note too, table stakes to all XR apps or applications and experiences, they all have to be easy to onboard, they must be intuitive, and they also must have comfort through extended use. I think, you know, as we have these conversations quite a bit, Nirav, with your company Moonbeam, you set to connect the many corporate partnerships opportunities with ISVs, startups, and pretty much everything in between. And you've turned to using VR as one of your tools to collaborate. Why is that? And what have you seen work well?
I would say the genesis of why we're focusing on VR for collaboration is it really comes from the genesis of you're working on a thought product with a colleague or a company that you're looking to partner with. You could work for a long time over camera-based collaboration tools. At some point, you reach a point where you need to get together in the same room. And it's often when you're getting together to whiteboard. So how do you take the whiteboard experience? How do you make it natural, intuitive, and pervasive to let that conversation go from trying to look at each other in the eye, but to look at the thought product you're collectively developing? And VR really is the perfect medium for getting that pervasive, intuitive, and natural interface for creation of new thought. And that's kind of why Moonbeam focused on VR as one tool.
Yeah, that's a pretty interesting one, considering a lot of your user base, while they may use technology to integrate, the decision makers are not necessarily technologists per se, right? So you're right. Using a pretty much advanced method to facilitate, which may seem like a very simple interaction of whiteboarding being in the same space. Where have you seen in that kind of example, the onboarding? How do you get someone who is either new to VR to get them into a headset, to even want to, even receive a headset for this type of interaction?
I find that corporate innovation officers are willing to try things that are new, particularly if it's tailor-made to a business process that they already have. So part of our approach is to look at routine meetings that happen all the time and get someone out of the innovation group or the corporate innovation officer to adapt VR into that process. So it's a time-bound process. Probably don't want to have anyone in a headset for more than an hour. There's a structured process to the meeting. There are artifacts and documents that are needed for the meeting, and there is a set of outcomes that you want to have at the end of the meeting. That's the perfect initial implementation for a new technology like VR or XR, to not overtake the meeting, but enable something that could otherwise only be done in person.
That is actually a really good point. And I think, you know, one thing to note too with kind of the other CIO, right? So not your right. chief information officer, but the corporate innovation officers. What a key role for really facilitating that process, especially as you mentioned, a lot of these things are time bound and you still want to maintain that level of interaction.
I have a quick question for you. When you mentioned whiteboarding, you know, that's obviously one of the really important things when we get together in a room.
Yep.
How integrated is that with the real world? Can you take what was created on your whiteboard and bring it back into the physical world?
Yeah, so I think that's essential, right? You cannot have things that only happen in the virtual space. It needs to come back to other corporate tools. So with Moonbeam, we're looking at ways to definitely PDF that content and bring it out, but also integrate with other knowledge management tools like Miro and Miro. We're looking at ways to integrate directly into SlideWork, so back to PowerPoint and other platforms that are used for, sorry to use PowerPoint as a knowledge sharing tool, but it kind of is for certain organizations. And it's essential that whatever you develop in VR needs to be able to go back to your desktop work environment. Without that, you just don't get adoption.
Yeah, it's true. And Kirby, you know, you spend so much time in VR collaboration spaces when you're not in a headset, your head's down pretty much working with WebXR and IoT. So pretty much collaboration is what you do. For you, what stands out as what is working well in XR collaboration?
Yeah, so number one, I would say that even though the technology is still evolving, it's at a point where can derive business value from it. So one example there might be something like Ford Motor Company. Just recently, they posted some blogs with some of their partners like Autodesk, and they actually put out a YouTube video that I would encourage folks to have a look at. I believe they had like four engineers, designers, all in the same virtual world at the same time, being able to evaluate design of new vehicle options. So that's number one. You can find use cases for the technology. And sort of to go back to what Nirav said, that it's not so much that you have a technology and you're trying to force it onto others, but there's a business need in this particular case that they have geographically dispersed teams. And how can you quickly and efficiently communicate with each other, especially when you're looking at something that's in the 3D realm? So VR collaboration is perfect for that.
Yeah, and I'm sure from a P&L standpoint, having to reduce the amount of travel that it takes to have these teams together. Of course, the risk of not getting it right outweighs the cost of any sort of OPEX or travel. So there's always kind of that balance between having to get it right, understanding spatial, understanding and awareness. I think the both Ford and in general, the automotive industry was one of the first to adapt VR, and for very good reasons. It used to take years to conceptualize vehicle design in terms of just the logistics, right, that it took. And now with VR collaboration software, they're able to do that in a matter of months. So definitely kind of a good use case, a good best practice for that as well.
Another area that I think folks can derive value from now kind of covers meetups, conferences, education, especially post-COVID here, where you simply can't get together in a physical space, or at least not many of you in the same physical space. So some of the things that I think are working good currently are scene designs, and this is kind of pros and cons, but having a design that fits the needs of that conference so it doesn't feel too overwhelming or too constrained, getting that right balance. The other thing that, you know, we already talked about was whiteboards in a session. Mm-hmm. So we can definitely do that today with a lot of these platforms where you can bring in your own content to share. So that's vital. That's working today. There's a lot that's right today, and we just need to keep iterating.
You know, Kirby, you brought up an interesting point there with conferences. I've been getting a lot of questions from academics who have been forced to go online for their class, and that works great for lectures. they're having a lot of problems with group exercises, group collaboration, breaking off into smaller teams to work on a group assignment. I think that's another area where VR can help make a big difference. And maybe I should say group about three more times.
Great group discussion, guys. Yeah, no, I totally agree. I think, you know, when we look at XR collaboration opportunities, we talk a lot about how to mimic what we're currently doing today. We talk about the ability to integrate into an existing workflow. We also talk about taking those digital assets in the VR space and bringing them into the 2D space. And those are really important in terms of continuing the conversation. But Nirav, you bring up another point as well. As universities and other groups are trying to find ways to collaborate and use this type of medium, what we're also learning is some of the old ways just didn't work that well, right? So collaboration, while the intent was for us to work together, was it really a level playing field? Were those that actually had inputs and ideas, were they even allowed to properly have an environment where they could share those ideas? So I think that's also, while we look at things you must do, there's also great opportunity for XR in collaboration to do the things that we were not doing well better. And that's why I feel like XR collaboration apps are really off to a good start, but there's definitely much more room to grow. And I think there's really two parts to this, if we can simplify that way, is one, how to make XR collaborative experiences better, and how to get more users into the headset. So for the first question, how do we make XR collaboration platforms, applications better?
I think we covered a lot of that. But there's a few other areas I want to add. I mean, XR applications needs to be more than a gimmick. It needs to be more than a nice space where we get together and talk. It needs to be a place where we can actually do work. So number one of that is the ability to create work product and export it. Number two is the ability to integrate that into a broader information management system. So action items, task tracking, you know, really ask the question, what comes next out of this conversation and how do you enable that? And then lastly, the input devices really are not quite there yet. So we talked a lot about whiteboarding, but whiteboarding in open space with no feedback and no tension, it's really hard to draw that way, right? So how do we integrate third-party tools? Wacom tablets have been around forever. Is there a benefit to integrating that into VR? I think that's still a question.
Those are great points. Creating a work product and really focusing on that tangible, what you can actually export, and then bringing that back into the workflow. Some of the challenges a lot of companies have as they try to get into the XR space, not realizing that the conversation needs to continue and it needs to get put back into the existing platforms and systems. I think there's, of course, a big opportunity when it comes to input. How do you collaborate and feel that you have group feedback and sometimes can be a digitally isolating environment? One of the areas I think, too, as you start to kind of compound that is how do you get the most amount of change? And I feel, you know, a lot of that is multi-platform support.
Yeah, that's one thing that I found in particular with a large, you know, conference type setting is that even though the platform does support headsets, most people still don't have a headset today, right? So there's, you know, millions of headsets out there, but there's billions of web browsers. So the trick is to be able to incorporate a desktop experience that's good for the desktop user, but also doesn't take away too much from those folks that are in a headset, because we don't want to have another, you know, digital divide there. So that, you know, that's important in conferences and education. Again, if you're a corporation, perhaps you can have budget to issue headsets just like you would a mobile phone or laptop. So then it's not an issue. But that is a bit of a trick right now, I think. You know, you don't always want to go to the lowest common denominator of the desktop, but yet you need to allow them to experience the conference or education material too.
Kirby, if you don't mind, I'm going to counter you on that. Multi-platform support is an expensive prospect to startups. You know, the funding environment is not great right now. And when they're building out net new for a enterprise, you know, enterprises don't have an install base. They don't have a number of headsets that they currently have in stock. They're going to be buying the headset as well as the application all at once. Under those circumstances, how much should startups prioritize developing multi-platform applications, knowing that their resources are limited and the install base isn't down to one piece of hardware or another?
Yeah, that's a great question. I can give it one of those answers where it depends.
Of course.
But to be more serious, if you are targeting enterprise customers, you might look at some type of model where you could attract maybe smaller businesses or even individuals by offering maybe a subscription plan that includes hardware with that experience that you're creating for them.
Yeah, and I think prioritization is pretty important when it comes to helping to maximize your investment that you're making. So I think when in doubt, always look at two things. Who is your customer? What do they need? And what are your corporate goals? And that will really help you to identify which platforms to prioritize, where does scale happen for your application. Going generic when it comes to web-based platforms like Zoom or like Teams makes sense when you have an install base. You can actually increase that reach. However, with XR, you have to be very particular around which customer segment you want to target. Even enterprise is too generic, as there are many categories within that space. So being very specific on who your customer is, what they need, and what your company goals are or your product goals are will really help to prioritize those various aspects. But I think while we may not have to worry too much about multi-platform approach, it is something that is super critical. I feel as though multi-platform support is going to be key in creating the growth inflection point that everyone keeps on waiting for XR to happen. While we are starting to get that killer app or that use case that or that scenario that you need, and now it's going to be the interoperability, bringing multiple users into this space. And AR is still pretty niche with only a few players. And so designing for a fragmented ecosystem can be very expensive and very much a challenge. And prioritization is going to be very key there.
Yeah, and actually, with multi-platform, I guess we could also consider various capabilities of headsets. Some have eye tracking, some don't. Do you handle both cases? Do you have a requirements list for your experience that you must have eye tracking, for example?
Yeah, speaking of eye tracking, I feel like that is an entire episode in itself. So before we all jump in on that amazing conversation, I'm going to table that for next time. What about social conventions, right? As we look at best practices, we've talked about the various different groups of people working together. I know we've talked about anonymity before, especially it makes a lot of sense for event spaces. But what about professional environments? What about collaboration? How important is the social aspect of XR collaboration platforms and applications?
So I have a pretty interesting mistake that we've made in terms of when we were early in product development. Everyone who joined the meeting spawned from the same place, which was an interesting phenomenon when suddenly you had someone inside of you. Very, very disturbing. So, very quickly we decided to randomize the spawn point so that you are not within someone else who hasn't moved yet. But that brings up an interesting point. What I notice is when someone first joins a VR collaboration space, it's hard to have a conversation at first. They're running around the room. There's so much motion. They're just trying to get a sense of the control. They're running from here to there while trying to have a conversation. The social conventions we rely on in meetings, like chairs, like line of sight, we need to bring that into VR because that adapts well to our brains in terms of knowing where to sit. It really structures human interaction in a way that is not really apparent initially. Vinay, you were probably looking to get more into the effect of anonymity on interactions and such. I find that there's certain benefit to talking to a comical avatar in that, race doesn't matter. Gender really doesn't matter. You could just have a conversation about the subject at hand without bringing in a lot of implicit biases that we do. I'd love to see recruiting explored in VR.
That would be amazing on so many different levels, right? Innovation is not just about technology, it's also about the ability to incorporate ideas. And so that could be such a wonderful way or implementation of some of these best practices or opportunities with XR collaboration.
So when you mentioned the spawn point, that got me thinking too of some of the times I've been in some of these experiences. One thing that's kind of creepy is when somebody has a headset that's being tracked versus somebody that's just a desktop avatar. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, they take the headset off and drop it on the floor. You know, maybe they're going for a coffee, but you just see their avatar suddenly go through the floor or go limp or, you know, be looking off into space. And it's very odd.
That's true.
It's almost like the system needs to recognize that or have a key that you can press on a controller to say, you know, pause, but your character at least still remains looking normal.
It almost seems like depending on your customer or your user base, your experience doesn't have to be very varied. If you're new to XR, having a very limited environment or constrained environment may be very beneficial. If you're kind of a more advanced user, having those options are going to be very beneficial. When we look at professional settings versus social settings, in the spirit of collaboration, are there some nuances that we should be aware of? For example, is having a funny or fun avatar in a professional setting off-putting, distracting? What are some considerations to make? Nirav, you have a very interesting client base when it comes to what Moonbeam is trying to do. Some of your partners that have business opportunities may be in the government space, they may be in the public sector. There's so many, and private as well. There's so many different factors to consider as you have very distinct, not just people or users, but also business entities, and now in a very common environment. Where do you feel that you need to balance out those scenarios in order to have a good environment for those various stakeholders?
I think attire in a professional setting is a matter of expression. You're presenting yourself the way you want people to respond to you. And, you know, sometimes that may be, you know, suit and tie buttoned up. Sometimes that may be a little bit more playful. You're not going to walk into a business meeting, regardless of how lax the corporate culture is, in a chicken suit. And likewise, you shouldn't probably come into a corporate setting in a virtual experience in a ridiculously crazy avatar. At the same point, do you need to be in a suit and tie? It kind of depends on the corporate culture. My personal avatar is a suit and tie with a blue beard.
That's actually a great way to kind of balance out those various kind of environments and scenarios. How much of who you are as a person do you feel need to kind of shine through? Of course, if you think of industries like business development, right, where you as a person are the product. And so to anonymize that may take away from the opportunity and the interaction, which is really the whole purpose.
Yeah, I think, again, that depends on the corporate culture and what your objectives are. I actually think this, in the same way we put a lot of thought into our social media presence, which is, you know, just still images, I think over time, people are going to start putting a lot of thought into their avatar presence, because you're going to want to express yourself in different ways in different environments.
Yeah, sounds like, of course, which is a great thing. There's really no silver bullet to solve what makes a good XR collaboration application or platform. There's so many different opportunities, and that's really what you want for adoption to happen. You want to have choices, but you also want to be able to establish best practices. It's kind of why conversations like these are so valuable to the industry and to the ecosystem, as you get the perspective of someone who's building these platforms, someone who's using these platforms, and then somebody who's actually really trying to make sure that their customers are meeting together to get the most benefit of not just an XR platform, but in general, when it comes to the various engagement opportunities that we have, especially as we get more and more into social distancing being the new norm.
One other thing with that, as we move more and more of our lives into digital, having that digital identity that can be recognized at various places, different platforms, I think, like you mentioned, can be very, very important. You know, it's almost like digital humans. For example, there's, I think, a pop star out of Japan that is completely digital. There's actually not even a human behind it, but yet there's so much identity with that character that there's a huge following. What I'm trying to say is that companies that can do 3D scanning are going to become extremely popular as more and more of us join the virtual world. along those lines too, just like Steam may have a game that's free, or you know, Fortnite's free, but you can purchase add-ons for your character. And I think the same thing's going to happen there. We're going to have fashion in VR. I want to buy something that I can place on my jacket, that type of thing.
Yeah, especially as the ability to dress up and express yourself through fashion diminishes with less physical interactions. You're going to want to be able to express that your digital fashion as well. Earlier, Kirby, you had mentioned platform support being so important. You had mentioned that it's not that important right now. And this is really where the inflection point happens in terms of platform architecture. Once digital identities become so critical and you start to use your digital identity cross-platform, cross-headsets, cross-devices, knowing that now and how to build for that now is going to be a competitive advantage for when you're able to really turn that on. And of course, it goes back down to what resources do you have and what's the most amount of impact for your customer can you build and bring today? These are all really great opportunities in terms of best practices, right? To create work product when you're in a digital environment, to integrate that product into your workflow and to really answer the question, what's next? And then also input, making sure the things that we're doing in our digital space, that they're intuitive, they make sense, and you want to continue to do them. And that really kind of ties that into the design. Great example of spawning on top of each other, or limiting design constraints, or including constraints in your design to make onboarding really easier, digital identity. And lastly, multi-platform support. All really five important keys as you're considering how to build a good XR collaboration application and how to evaluate if one really meets your needs. While those are great starting points, what is it going to take though for more adoption, aside from good design practices, for XR collaboration to really take off? You know, there's the obvious hardware price, availability, but what is most needed for integrators and creators to really enable the market to grow?
So I have a very strong opinion on this, and that is that I think we need business value first and foremost. You know, we have to transition from the industry building tools that are gimmicky and just fun spaces that highlight features to prioritizing those features for business value. Keep in mind, we are not at the dawn of social media right now. We're at the dawn of the internet in the XR space. And that was a good 10-year period that we went from the dawn of the internet to emergency e-commerce to eventually social media. We are building this infrastructure from the scratch, and that relies heavily on firm business value before we get into consumer buying patterns and you know, the killer app mentality that we've been living in for most of our lives.
Yep, it's funny. The question of business value, very fortunate to have been part of this XR revolution. VR has been around for quite some time, but the consumerization of VR in the last 6 years has really introduced so much more opportunity. And one of the questions I always ask, especially when evaluating whether or not an experience is good, aside from my personal experience, is what problem are you solving? Who are you solving it for? And I think that question continues to be a challenge for a lot of the applications in XR that are created.
It's also interesting to think about the convergence of different technologies and what that enables for a customer. So one of the examples I think that's really interesting is using IoT data, real-time data, in an XR experience, perhaps to control some telerobotic experience where you can maybe go into a dangerous situation and have all that data in real time from the IoT devices, but yet not let the robot be totally autonomous, but take input from the human and the human experience. So convergence is a big thing, and timing that just right when they mature so that you can build something that demonstrates big business value.
Kirby, great points on convergence. The ability to integrate these various technologies into what's next is definitely has been one of the dreams for XR. And as in the spirit of XR collaboration apps, those are going to be kind of the next gen for XR collaboration, much more than your in-person meeting spaces, if you will, but how do you take this technology to empower other technologies? I mean, that's, I think, is going to be a really great opportunity in itself. But, you know, we talked about a lot of strategic ways to get XR collaboration to grow with business value, convergence, you know, solving the problem. But what are some of the things that collaborators, designers, developers, and practitioners can do today? What are some of the tactics that they can do today to really help increase or speed up really the adoption of usage of XR collaboration applications and platforms?
So Kirby had a really good point about the subscription model. I think the ability to bundle in hardware with an application, particularly when it's tied tightly to a line of business application, is going to be critical because the install base just isn't there. I think also thinking about paid for prototypes, frankly, I mean, we all in the startup world want to have a pretty generic platform, and enterprises want to have a solution that precisely meets their needs. As your startups are engaging with potential customers, look for paid prototypes where the corporation will actually pay you to customize your platform for their needs. I think these tactics are great ways to get in the door and then pivot to the hardware install base they might have, you know, as your customers might be needing it.
Yeah, I think that's a great example of the paid for prototypes, customizing to the specific enterprise need. And that also does go back to design. Are you building an application or a platform? And so that's going to be part of the considerations to make as you look at the next version or revision of your product, if you already have one, or if you're building an XR collaboration platform, is what's the level of extensibility, and then how do you prioritize customizing for a particular enterprise, maybe niche, or may apply to other use cases as well?
And a big part of this actually is no different than any other large software application. The most successful of those always offer the customer an API or a set of APIs. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, so they can extend it, or more importantly, as Nirav said before, is actually integrating into their existing workflow. So without making, or at least providing, even if you're going to charge for those APIs, that's critical.
You know, and that actually, there is a whole ecosystem of integrators and consultants that build line of business application for enterprises. I don't know if you guys heard about Accenture releasing their own virtual reality collaboration platform. I view that as a massive failure of the VR collaboration startup ecosystem. Because really, if we were building in a way that allowed consulting firms to APIs that let them customize how they wanted, Accenture never would have felt the need to build their own. They would have just struck up a partnership with one of the companies in the ecosystem. That might be too dour.
That's actually, no, not at all. I think that actually does highlight, to your earlier point, enterprises need these applications to solve a problem. And all the way through, when you originally talked about best practices, you talked about the ability to create work and integrate that work. And when that does not happen, and the need is that great, clearly with a firm like an Accenture or many other major consulting firms, they are hearing what their customer pain points are and they're understanding technology. So I think also, more importantly, it shows both the failure but also the opportunity in the XR space, that the problem is so great that a non-traditional XR, which you would say an XR first type of company, is going to have to create their own solution. Because at the end of the day, while companies want to be able to use these platforms and tools to build software, is not just expensive up front, but the maintenance, the teams that have to continue to maintain and that infrastructure that's needed. It's not necessarily one of those core competencies that enterprises really want to build. They want to be able to implement first. Well, guys, looks like that's the time we have here today. Another great discussion. And for those of you listening, thank you so much. Your feedback goes a long way. So feel free to comment below. And of course, we'll read it and try to make sure we incorporate that into next time. So that's the time we have today. On behalf of Nirav and Kirby, I am Vinay. Thank you so much for joining us here on XRC Pod, the XR Seattle podcast.